Welcome into Leafs Lunch. It's Julia Tesshari, not Mike DiStefano today. He is on a cruise enjoying himself. We're all a little jealous of him, but I've got Luca Celebre with me today, so it's okay. Kevin Woodley's going to join us in a few minutes, writer for In Goal Magazine, and you can only imagine what we're going to talk to him about. He's a goaltending expert, so we'll dive into that whole situation. Nice day at the office today, though. It's International Women's Day. TSN had a nice little mixer for us this morning. It kind of went south on me, though, Luca. Like,
I was going to say, first and foremost, I wanted to bring this up, but obviously, happy International Women's Day.
Right, thank you.
So many inspiring women here in sports, and just, I'm inspired by you guys every single day.
It's fun to be mushy. We did a great photo shoot in Goal Magazine, like all the TSN girls. Anyways,
so cool.
This to me is like the most hilarious thing that ever could happen, because me and Marissa Roberto have this ongoing joke, and we talked about it all morning today, that we always decide we're going to take International Women's Day off, because like it's a day to celebrate women, but we always end up working way more than we normally do on International Women's Day.
Yeah.
Like today, my schedule is like overlapped all day until like 7 p.m. tonight. Anyways, so we go to this mixer. It was a really nice time. We had great chats with everyone. I eat this chocolate croissant, or so I thought, Luca.
Oh, goodness.
But it was a hazelnut croissant, and I am very much deathly allergic to hazelnuts. So I ripped a couple Benadryls. Marissa had me. She had some in her bag, but, like, I'm kind of itchy. I'm wearing a jacket right now because I feel, like, what the heck? And yesterday my car broke down.
It's a series of unfortunate events, for sure.
I want a refund on this Women's Day, Luca. It doesn't seem like the universe is honoring me the way that it should.
I don't think that's how that works.
It's not how it works.
I'm
waiting for something else bad to happen to me. Is the only thing because you know you're Italian.
In threes.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I know.
So
I
my
know.
Car went yesterday. I got to go pick that up after.
That's horrible.
It sounds like it should be handled though. Like it wasn't the worst thing in the world because the Jeep dealership is actually closer to here than I thought, so it worked out.
Mm-hmm.
And then the whole croissant gate this morning, like if they're hazelnut, you gotta label them, unfortunately.
Oh,
like,
yeah, you absolutely do.
They look chocolatey as heck.
That's so dangerous.
Positive it was a chocolate croissant. So I'm just kind of waiting for the third shoe to drop. I'm just hoping I don't get physically harmed or anything, but it is a full moon right now as well.
So what does that mean?
I don't know, Luca. Crazy things happen. You might turn into a werewolf.
Okay. The only thing I can think of is werewolf shenanigans with a full moon, but not anything else.
Everything goes freaky during a full moon. Like, emergency departments report more people in during a full moon. Like, it's a thing. People are crazy during the full moon. Also,
I was going to say, if you want a refund on the day, I mean, we should just be celebrating every single day.
Okay. Throw me a party. I would like a cake.
I would love it. I would love to do that because you're awesome. You're a rock star. And everyone we work with, too.
Okay. I can't take any more comments.
I know. I love that I'm showering you with compliments because you physically were just like, no, stop this. So, no.
We also forgot something very vital when we were in the midst of talking about coaches who would totally bench their top lines. We failed to mention Daryl Sutter.
Oh, yeah, he'll do it in a
heartbeat. That guy would do it in a second. He would staple anyone to the bench if he felt like it.
What did he do with... What was the Johnny Gaudreau thing last year? He just called him out ahead of his... It was like a milestone game, wasn't it?
He was going for 100 goals. Was he going for 100 points on the season? His family was in the building, and Sutter said something like... Oh, I have no idea, but I know what you're talking about. I remember it was hoopla for a minute.
Yeah. Oh,
Daryl.
It was on his 500th game, and he said, "Oh, this video is not loading." But I think it was like, hopefully, he has more. What's the quote here? It's gonna load any second now. It's
I'm
gonna be worth
it. I'm
waiting
on the edge of my seat. It's gonna be so
amazing. Hopefully, he has more energy than in his 499th.
Yeah, so
this
right.
was ahead of playing his 500th game, and he said, "Hopefully, he has more energy in his 500th than he did in his 499th."
Yeah, I guess it was probably a fair assessment. Poor Daryl. Like, it's crazy how fast things change in the NHL, Luca. Like last year, Mr. Jack Adams. Calgary was amazing, and this year, like, it feels like Daryl's seat is getting a little... He has a great relationship with ownership in Calgary. Mm-hmm. I know that, like, Brad Tree Living really likes him. Like, he's great when it comes to the Calgary Flames, but suddenly it's starting to feel like he's kind of in the hot seat. Like, if there actually is something up with him and Huberto, unfortunately, like, you have to side with your guy that you locked up long-term for...
Yep.
Many, many millions of dollars.
Yeah, 100%. And that whole Flame season has been weird. And you can talk about the goalie, too. And I know we're going to talk about
that.
Yeah, well, I'll
good
transition. You can introduce him.
Luca, Kevin Woodley joining us on the phone right now. He writes for In Goal Magazine. How are you, Kevin?
I'm good. It's we got rid of the snow here in Vancouver. We don't handle that very well on the West Coast. Sunny, beautiful today. Driving into the rink to watch two of the worst teams in hockey, the Canucks and Ducks. So my day is exciting.
It's a beautiful thing. It's the Bedard Bowl. It is very exciting because whoever gets that kid is getting a good one. But Kevin, I suppose like this came up kind of off the cuff. We were talking about the Calgary Flames and whether or not Daryl Sutter's in the hot seat and if there's any way they could sneak into the playoffs still in the wild card race in the West. But Markstrom has been the guy that this all kind of hinges on. He's had a couple promising performances recently, but what do you make of his body of work so far? And do you think he could turn it around in this last home stretch?
Well, I mean, certainly last night was a good sign, and the start before that looked a little more like the Jacob Markstrom who was a Vezina Trophy finalist last year. And they're going to need that because clearly goal scoring has become an issue. And, I do wonder, I haven't looked at the numbers from last night in terms of the analytics because shots on goal rarely tell the full story in terms of quality. But I do wonder, as things get really tight for the Flames, are they buckling down a little more defensively than maybe they have for Daryl throughout this season? I mean, clearly, I don't think it's a secret. I don't think, frankly, you needed the Alan Walsh tweet to tell you that there's some issues within that locker room in terms of the coach and how he handles things. And there's a shelf life there. And to me, they hadn't been the same team defensively. Now they seem to have buckled down. Markstrom's playing great, but there's no goals. And so you wonder how much of that buckle down comes at the cost of trading chances or generating chances at the other end. So that said, hey, they were up against Philip Gustafson last night, so maybe I shouldn't discount the fact that that kid has just been brilliant. We want to talk about goalies in Canadian markets. How about the Ottawa Senators saying sayonara to Philip Gustafson, and he now is the only goaltender in the National Hockey League that has a better adjusted save percentage this season than Linus Ullmark. That's wow. How good he's been for the Minnesota Wild. Like, I feel like that is maybe one of the most overlooked stories in the goaltending world this season, is how good Philip Gustafson has been in Minnesota.
It's the answer to a question that I was going to ask of just like, we know Ullmark has just been incredible. He's been this out-of-nowhere story and just everything he's done. Like, the Vezina has been wrapped up for a while. When you're talking about surprises outside of Ullmark, is Gustafson at the top of your list? Is there another guy you can think of? Surprising could go either way, too. Could be bad, could be good as far as a goaltender's play this season. Outside of him, is there anyone else that comes to your mind?
To be honest with you, I'll throw this out there. I don't see Linus. I mean, obviously, historically good season, so maybe that's a bit of a surprise. But, like, to me, Linus Ullmark, and again, I lean on the adjusted numbers here, like relative to shot quality, Clearside Analytics, having a look under the hood there and seeing how a goalie actually performs based on the environment he's in. Ullmark was really good in Buffalo. So you expected an adjustment period last year. I think there was NHL.com, actually Amelie Benjamin had a great story on some of the things that Linus was going through last year. And there's also a change in Linus's game this season. In an era where most goalie coaches will preach set and square, Ullmark and the Bruins are only preaching one of those things, and that's square. If you watch him play, and this is quite counterintuitive to how a lot of goalie coaches would want their goalies to play and to do things, he's got a little backwards drift in his game on purpose, even on open looks, even on open shots. And so talking to him and talking to Bob Asenza when they were in town here recently, they butted heads a little bit over. Both of them used that phrasing last season. It didn't make a ton of sense to Linus. He tried it. It didn't always work. But he really bought in this summer. And so, you know, in a game that's become increasingly dynamic east-west and a lot of laterals and a lot of side-to-side, rather than dropping, sort of being set and locking yourself in and almost dropping forward into a butterfly, a little bit of backwards momentum. They call it recoil. Bob even said, I'm not a physics guy, but bodies in motion tend to stay in motion. So recoveries, lateral plays, east-west, pucks that hit sticks and off legs in front of a goalie off a shot, broken plays we call them. Like, Ullmark's numbers are off the charts in all of those, and I think a lot of that is because he's bought into this concept of actually moving backwards off shots and off plays that aren't just rush chances on purpose. And it's somewhat counterintuitive to the way a lot of modern goaltending is taught, and it's worked really well for them. Other surprises, Gustafson, I mentioned, small sample size. There's not enough of a sample there to me for him to, you know, be in the Vezina discussion. UC Saros, not so much a surprise, but it's really hard to back it up from one year to the next. We saw that with Thatcher Demko here with the injury. That might be his performance earlier this year might be a surprise in the other direction to me. But Saros has established himself as an elite, you know, year after year guy. Shesterkin not being able to say the same is a surprise to me, given the skill set and the tools, the weight of expectation, a team that, you know, in some way doesn't lean on him as much. Like, they're not outplayed to the degree they were last year, and that creates a different kind of pressure when you're expected to be great, but you're not as busy and you're not having to steal games. It's a different kind of mental pressure, and, you know, he's had a bit of an up-and-down season. A bit, but top of my head, those would be some of the bigger surprises to me.
With Kevin Woodley right now of In Goal Magazine, and I wanted to ask you about Thatcher Demko. You mentioned that you're at Canucks Morning Skate today, and you'll be at the game tonight. The start of his season was surprising. How much of that do you think was to do with the injury, and how has he found some stability now?
Two things. Like for sure, the injury, as the season went on, became a factor. I believe, and I don't mean the injury that ultimately shut him down for 3 months. He had a procedure in the off season, and by the time he got hurt, he was compensating for that side. Like, he was basically, and I don't even think he was conscious of it. Like, it was a subconscious body protects itself, little extra movement on the one side that was actually fine as a compensation to protect the injury from the summer that was operated on. But as soon as he had to move east-west in that position, that compensating position, it extended the chain down the right side significantly, and so that groin injury was only a matter of time. 3 months later, he's got some outside help in terms of how he's training and the way he's taking care of himself physically. I think his body feels as good as ever, and you're seeing the results. He's been really good since he came back, and that's even having to shake off what he admitted were mental scar tissue, the uncertainty of being able to trust his body and being able to go out there and you know, perform these dynamic east-west, you know, spectacular lateral pushes and movements that really, you know, defined him. And that brings me to the other part of his start this season. The reason they defined his game, I actually think there's a lot of good technical structure there. But because of the way this team defended, you need the other element. You have to have that dynamic, explosive, extended ability, because this team gives up so much through the middle of the ice and so many seam passes, and especially pre-Rick Tocchet. And that was, like, Thatcher Demko was fine at the beginning of the season. The team was not, defensively. They were a bottom third defensive team last year, and he performed at a Vezina consideration-worthy level to sort of get them even remotely in a playoff race last season. For the first third of this season, before they made the coaching change, they weren't bottom third. They were bottom three. They were the worst team in the National Hockey League in terms of the quality and quantity that they gave up off the rush, which is where most dynamic offense is created. And that's just too much for any goaltender to overcome. And so I think he was fine early. The compensation issue that led to the injury crept up as the season went on. But I also believe, you know, speaking of the Ducks and Gibson, coming into town here in Vancouver tonight, like, I believe bad defense has a cumulative effect on goaltending. When you can't trust, structure breaks down as consistently as we saw it break down here in Vancouver this season. And, I mean, just go through Canucks media, you know, throughout the season, and how many times one corner and, you know, an elite player standing all alone on the back door, how many times there's wide open seams for the puck to be moved through east-west. Like, they were a tire fire defensively. And as that piles up over a month or two, you can't help but cheat. You know, reads that goaltenders make, and we do video reads with goalies every week at InGoalMag.com, where they sit down and review their saves and talk to us about the reads they're making, they require at least some degree of predictability. When your own defense doesn't know where they're supposed to go, and so they all end up going to the same place, how the hell are you supposed to read what you're supposed to do when they don't seem to know what they're doing? And I think that over time, it leaves you guessing, it leaves you cheating, it leaves you playing deeper than you'd like to, because you can't get to the top of your crease and trust that's where you can safely be, because there might be someone sitting back door wide open behind you. And I think, as much heat as he has taken over recent years.
Oh, he's in the car right now. Sorry, we lost you there just for a second, Kevin.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, there you go.
I was just going to say, John Gibson's been going through this for 5 years. Like, so I know it's easy to pick on John Gibson. I've watched some of his performances this year. Like, you know, when you can't trust what's going on in front of you, when it's that wide open, there's only so much you can do. So it feels times like, hopefully it's not like this tonight, but it feels like at times when I watch the Ducks, they're trying to kill John Gibson. There's a guy that I know he's been maligned by a lot of people. I really want to see him get a chance with a real team before he's done, because I still believe there's an elite talent there.
We're talking with Kevin Woodley of In Goal Magazine. You mentioned a couple of things just stood out about what you were talking about, and kind of structure, familiarity. It's so much more that goes into just the goals against and saves for goalies, and how they approach the game, how they kind of feel the game, yeah, and the mindset that they have. So when you're looking at the Tampa Bay Lightning, just went on a bit of a five-game losing streak, cleaned it up. The one constant, though, has been Andrei Vasilevskiy, and he's still managing to put up insane numbers. He's second in the league in wins with 29. He's 10th in save percentage. He always just seems to have that consistency. So how does a goalie continue to kind of keep course despite his team losing? And maybe that speaks to some of the things you were just talking about, with whether it's structure or familiarity.
Well, I would say some of that structure has dissipated this year in Tampa Bay. Like, listen, to me, the most remarkable thing the Tampa Bay Lightning have done is take a group of elite talented players, and John Cooper has them bought in on how to play well defensively and within those structured systems over the past couple of years. And it was a lesson they learned the hard way, right? Like that first round exit, forever ago, you looked at their high danger 5-on-5 goals against or expected goals against, and they were 20th in the league. I don't care how good your goaltending is, even the best in the world in Vasilevskiy, if you give up great consistent basis, you're not going to win. And they were out in the first round that year. The next year, and pretty much ever since, they've been one of the best teams in that statistic. It's a really good barometer of playoff matchups. And ever since they trended up in that statistic, they've been a cup contender. I actually don't have it in front of me to pull it up this year, but on a game-to-game basis, it feels, and we've heard John Cooper talk about this, where they've gotten away from it at times and leaned on Vasilevskiy more. It's funny, you mentioned top 10 in save percentage. When I adjusted for environment, last I checked a few days ago, it was top 4, right? So he's actually outperforming a defensive environment that has, I won't say cratered, because they still have that in their DNA, that defending, but it's certainly slipped from the levels it was at before, and you're asking Vasilevskiy to do more. He's perfectly capable of it. But again, whether it's Demko at the start of the season or Vasilevskiy when they decide to stop caring about their own end or trading chances off the rush, eventually there's only so much a goaltender can do, even when, like I said, Andrei Vasilevskiy remains the best in the world, in large part because of the consistent ability to play as much as he does and play at that high level year after year after year.
Yeah, okay, so you're saying there's a chance. That feels like an appropriate time to switch to the Toronto Maple Leafs with Kevin Woodley right now of In Goal Magazine. We have, there's no goaltending drama in Toronto, but we have goaltending drama here at TSN 1050, Kevin, because the guys in our morning show and a couple guys on our afternoon drive show think that if they're both available, Matt Murray will be the starter game one of the playoffs. The only way he won't be the starter is if he's unavailable. But Samsonov's body of work this year has been impressive. So where do you stand as to who the Leafs will go to in the postseason versus Vasilevskiy?
I'm going to plant my ass firmly on the fence.
I like it. It's a safe spot, man.
I don't want to cause any ruffle any feathers. B, I don't watch them nearly as closely as y'all do. So on a game-to-game basis, I looked at the numbers. Like to me, Matt Murray had a really good start. And I think when he's healthy, you know, as much as that deal, and I think I might have been the only person that actually didn't mind that deal for the Leafs and actually liked it, because I'm watching the changes in Matt's game, and as much as they evaporated in his first appearance there in Toronto, they're sort of back. The way he's able to narrow out a little bit, his mobility improves from that. Like, I like a lot of what I see out of Matt. Again, like, am I saying he's Thatcher Demko or Andrei Vasilevskiy or in that tier? No. But his performance is, again, relative to a good environment. Like, if you're a goalie, you want to play in Toronto. The narrative of them being a team that doesn't defend, I mean, God, I hope that's been out the window for years now. Because they're a team that goalies should want to play behind. But the real reason I'm sitting on the fence is, why not both? Like, why do we have to declare a starter in a year where we're seeing tandems rule the day? And that could include the Boston Bruins and Linus Ullmark. Since mid-December, one of the only guys who has, you know, adjusted numbers that are near Linus Ullmark and Philip Gustafson is Jeremy Swayman. Marc-Andre Fleury, since mid-December, has similar numbers, like maybe not quite up with Gustafson, but he's been top 10 since mid-December. Why not, in an era where you have to play both, why is it absurd to suggest you could play both in the postseason? I know it never happens. Most coaches aren't brave enough to try it. One guy wins the first one, and you would never consider taking him out for the second. But when you do it consistently back and forth all season, I don't know why you can't go in there with an open mind towards using both in the playoffs. And I think in the case of the Leafs, there are specific things that will dictate, you know, not just beyond, like, you can't just look at results, you have to look at performance. And there are elements of Matt's game, and there are elements of Ilya's game that are very, oh, I hate the word pre-scout because it's just a scout, but they're pre-scoutable. It's not a word. I'm going to use it anyway.
Yeah.
But there are elements that you can attack in both guys very specifically. And if your team allows that to happen and you see it being exposed and you see another team doing something effectively against one of them and they're not able to counter that quickly, then you switch to the other guy.
Yeah.
Like, I see strengths and minuses in both guys, and I don't see why you have to absolutely, as much as we in the media want, you got to have a number one, because if you don't have a number one, you know, if you say you have two number ones, it means you don't have one. Like, I just think in an era of tandems, as much as a grind as the playoffs are and as much of a freak as Andre Vasilevsky is playing every game for the last three straight playoff runs, I'm tempted to use both. I think Minnesota waited way too long to go to Cam Talbot last year. And especially with Matt's, you know, inability to stay healthy, to put it frankly.
Yeah.
Even if he's your guy going in, you can't ride him all the way through. You're going to need both.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say when you were talking about Matt Murray and his game there. And we'll let you go after this, Kevin. I know you're busy today, but it's not really a performance-based stress with Matt Murray. It's more being able to stay in the net. And then, so I don't think a tandem in the playoffs is the craziest idea either. We just haven't really seen it. So how do you effectively, in your mind, deploy a tandem in the postseason?
Well, I'm going to go, people are going to tell me I'm taking crazy pills, but this is something I've wanted to see for a long time.
Oh my God, you're going to say back and forth, aren't you?
This is something that, like I think it's just my little pet project that I've always wanted to see. And like honestly, like, why not alternate? And maybe the home and road splits dictate. Maybe you alternate home and road, right?
Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, that's not crazy.
You know, Samsonov has been so good at home. Again, not going to pretend I've watched every game, but, you know, looking at some of the numbers, like, maybe you entertain that idea. Samsonov's obviously also never been the guy. Like, you're going to have to watch how pressure affects him. And again, not whether goals go in. Like, that's Curtis Sanford. That's the goalie coach. When we get into the playoffs and under pressure, does Ilya to continue, to, results be damned, does he continue to play the way we've been working on him playing in high-pressure moments? Or does he start to look different? Does he start to do things differently, which are signs of tension, which are signs that he may be feeling that moment? These are all things you have to consider. But honest to God, the back-and-forth tandem is something I've wanted to see. It actually worked once in the American Hockey League. Corey Schwab and Mike Dunham literally alternated every second game and won a Calder Cup. Robbie Fatorik was the coach, but all three of those names should tell you how long ago it was and how long I've been hoping for another team to try it at a higher level. We saw the San Jose Sharks one year go back and forth between Toskala and Nabokov the entire season, and I was convinced Ron Wilson was going to keep running that in the playoffs, and then Toskala got hurt like mid-March and Nabby ran the rest of the way. The other one is Vegas. Marc-Andre Fleury and Robin Lehner alternated starts for close to two straight months with the Vegas Golden Knights. And both of them had their best performances, maybe not of their entire career, but certainly in their time with Vegas. They were both playing at such a high level. So what do you do when you get in the playoffs? Fleury was brilliant in the first game. You feel like you need to go back to him. You ride him to the point where by the end of that series you barely get through. He's gassed. He's done. You have to start Lehner opening the next round. You basically give up a game because Robin hasn't played in a couple weeks. I just think, you know, as crazy as back and forth seems, it's not that terrible. Both guys managed to stay in a rhythm, especially if they've done it throughout the season. There's a lot of tandems that play a 2-1, you know, two starts to one, or back and forth throughout the year. Why not continue in the playoffs? The last thing you do in the playoffs, and this is what most coaches will say, win and you're in. Win and you're in from a goaltending perspective is stupid. The position has enough pressure on it. Win and you're in ignores the fact that the goalie doesn't often dictate whether the team wins or loses. Like, he can play great, and they doesn't get run support, and he loses. Win and you're in just adds a layer of, oh, man, if I don't win this game, I might not start again, and then the other guy might get on a run. Like, why do you want to create that dialogue within your goaltender's head in a position where they hire sports psychologists and all kinds of things to try and keep them in the moment? Why do you want to make them look at the future and consider a results-based mindset when everything is about the next shot, next save mentality? So I'm not a big fan of winning you're in. I'd much rather see a, hey, this is how we're going to go.
A plan in mind.
Play your best. Exactly.
Yeah.
Just roll it forward.
Okay, well, you sold me on that pretty well, Kevin. Lots of people think it's really outlandish to go back and forth in the postseason, but we know how good Samsonov's been at home. So it wouldn't be the craziest thing in the world to see, and it might be interesting. But we appreciate your time, and we hope we can catch up again down the road. Enjoy the Bedard Bowl tonight.
I will. Unfortunately, there's only one team in the Bedard Bowl tonight, because the only thing more predictable than Vancouver drivers sucking in the snow is the Canucks winning meaningless games down the stretch.
Oh, yeah.
To get them out of a good lottery spot.
You know, Vancouver boy, too. It just hurts. But enjoy, Kevin. That's Kevin Woodley, writer for In Goal Magazine.
That was fascinating.
Yeah.
We got a lot to digest. I know
we have a lot to unpack now. We're going to have Anna Dua on the other side, but I'd love if you all tweeted in at Leafs Lunch 1050 or text us at 1050-50 your thoughts on whether or not a tandem in the postseason is feasible. On the other side, we're going to have Anna Dua join us. She's a fantasy editor at the National Hockey League for now. Julia Cherry and Luca Celebre, this is Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050. Welcome into Leafs Lunch on TSN 1050. It's Julie Tashiri and Luca Celebre with you. The Leafs coming off a big win against the Devils last night, and we didn't even know when we booked her, but my old pal, Anna Dua, was in the building last night. She's a fantasy editor at the National Hockey League. How's it going, Anna?
It's going so good. I actually heard some Go Leafs Go chants, guys, while I was down there. It was loud enough for me to hear it from the other side of the building, just putting that out there.
Stop it. Okay, there was an incredible video of you last night, and I also just learned some jarring information about my co-host.
Oh my God.
Incredible video of you posted by Johnny Lazarus walking to your seat with your White Claw, looking very iconic in your outfit. And I said we're going to do White Claw power rankings, and I just said that to Luca, and the man looks me dead in my face and says he's never had a White Claw. What?
In your life?
Yeah, I've just never had one.
Luca, come the heck on. So let me give you my top three, Anna, just to get it out there. You had the best one in your hand. The black cherry one is the best, and then it's mango, and then after that, it's grapefruit.
How many are there?
There's a ton.
Okay.
There's a ton now. Now they've got these twisted ones. You have to get cultured, Luca. Okay. Anna, can you give me your top three before we get into the National Hockey League?
Oh my God, of course. There's so many, by the way. They've kind of fallen off. I'm hoping to bring them back. I'm glad that this video is getting some traction, but black cherry is my number one, too. I'm actually a lime girl as well.
Ooh.
So I have to do lime three. I love the lime ones, and pineapples, lime two, and pineapples number three for me.
Oh yeah, pineapple's kind of a sleeper. It's one of those new ones, but really mm-hmm. excellent stuff.
Okay.
With Anna Dua right now of the NHL, she does a lot of fantasy stuff there, doing great stuff down south right now. And you were in the building last night for the Leafs-Devils game, so you said you heard some Go Leaf Go chants. Bring me into the atmosphere a little bit more. And also, which one looked better in person, Austin or Mitch's goal?
Oh, they were both great, but Austin's goal really got the Leafs fans that were in the building super pumped. It was an absolute snipe of a goal, but the atmosphere is great, right? This Devils team, I got to give them some credit. They've really like built up the fan base. I went to a game earlier at the Prudential Center in the fall, and it just wasn't the same, and I went back. This was my first one in a while over there in Jersey, and It was sold out. The fans were having such a great time. It was just like an electric atmosphere. So it's going to be a super fun playoff to see the Leafs in it and the Devils in it.
I was there. When did me and Sam go? Must have been November.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
And the atmosphere was cool. Like, that was our first time going to a Devils game. But last night just felt different. Like, just even watching it on TV, fans felt electric. It really did have a playoff vibe. So I'm excited if we get the New York-New Jersey matchup.
Oh, it's going to be a cage match.
Imagine what that's going to be like. It's going to be insane.
Yeah, seriously. What do you think that looks like in the city, Anna?
That would be, like, literally ridiculous. I can't even... I hope that happens. You know, I'm a little biased just because I really want to see that happen for the league. But, I mean, I go to a lot more Rangers games than I go to Devils games, and MSG is always electric, but they're super pumped about their team. They're extra pumped now with the players they got after the trade deadline. So if that were to happen, that would be so great for New York and just this area in particular.
We talked about Austin Matthews and his goal and just how this season has been a little different for him. Obviously, I think there were a lot of expectations that he would hit 50 again. He may not hit 40 by the time the season's all done.
So
Julia thought he was hitting 70. I mean, there were a lot of people that thought he could do it. What stood out to you about him last night? Where are you with him? Are you good with, like, this down year as long as he kind of comes up with something clutch? Like, what is your take on Austin Matthews and his season?
I mean, everyone's not going to have a great year every single year. He's not having a bad year by any means. I think he's improved in a lot of aspects of his game that go beyond what we see on the score sheet this season, and he should be proud of that. He had a good game last night. I thought that was, like, one of the best games I've seen from him in a while. The Leafs, they came back and they really... The Devils thought they had it for a moment there in that game, so I think the entire offense really rallied. But it gave room a little bit this season, to be honest, for other players to take the next step. I've been very high on William Nylander for years, ever since he came into the NHL, and I knew he had a really high ceiling, so I was really excited to see him take that next step this year. And when players like Austin Matthews aren't producing to the extent that they can offensively, even though I don't think by any means he's having a poor year, it gives the opportunity for some other guys to take the next level.
Yeah, I remember you being high on Willie Nylander back in our Ryerson days, and he's kind of had an interesting transformation this season. He's gone from everybody's uncle in the GTA. We always make the joke, like, everybody's uncle doesn't like William Nylander, but he's kind of had this transformation season where he's really elevated his game. He's come a long way since that one clip in the playoff series versus Tampa where somebody caught him dogging on a back check and it went absolutely viral and he was like public enemy number one in the city. How has his game evolved in your eyes this season, Anna?
It happened so many times. I know when anything bad happened.
I know. It's always Willie's fault.
I'm going Twitter and it was like William Nylander's fault regardless of whether he was on the ice or not. And so I've been a defender of this guy for years and rightfully so, because just even watching him develop as a young player, I mean, he's so talented. He can skate well. He can produce well. And I was just waiting for him to showcase that ability in the National Hockey League because I knew he had such a high ceiling. He just has all of the qualities of an elite NHL player, and it's really come together for him this year. I mean, he's getting points almost every single night. He's putting up shots almost every single night. He's playing a lot of big minutes. He's had a couple of games this past week where he's like hovering around the 20-minute mark, and so I'm really happy to see this happen for him because he deserves it, and he's really proving right now how much he's worth in this league.
We're talking with Anna Dua, fantasy editor at the National Hockey League. Let's stick to one more player from last night's game on the Devils' side of things. Timo Meier still kind of finding his way into this lineup and getting accustomed to how the Devils play. There's obviously a lot of hype about bringing him in. He scored his first goal in his first game as a Devil, but I think all things considered, it hasn't been like this incredible start to his tenure, but he's still getting comfortable. What did you think of his play last night in his first game at home?
I think it's important to remember that, like, when he came over, he was still injured, so he's still getting a little bit used to this new system and finding his place in the lineup. It's a very different system than what he's used to playing in San Jose, and he also is just such an elite player. I've been waiting for him to come to a contender for quite some time because he's among league leaders in shots on goal despite playing on San Jose almost season after season, so he has such a high ceiling. I know they're going to move him around a bit in the lineup. So for the next couple of games, I'm excited to see like who he really meshes with and who he gels with, because I like him playing with Jack Hughes. I think he could play really, really well with Nico Hischier as well. I feel like that might be a little bit of a threat line. I know they're not breaking up that top line for the Devils just yet because they're playing really well at the moment, but I know they're going to move him around in the lineup. And when he finds his place and finds his game, he's like a really talented player, guys. I would say he's like a top 15 forward in the NHL at the very least, to be honest. It could be even higher.
Yeah. Okay, so I asked you about the atmosphere potentially in that maybe first-round matchup between the Devils and the Rangers. But in terms of the actual play on the ice, like, how do you think those two teams match up against one another? I have no idea who has the edge in the series. They just play such different styles. New York's got this heavy blue line and the really good goaltending, and New Jersey's so run-and-gun.
They're two very, very different teams, and bringing on guys like Patrick Kane and Vladimir Tarasenko, both of those guys are players who have been great players in this league for a long time, whereas the Devils, they have so many young players taking the next step this season, and so they're capitalizing on that, but that gives way for a little bit more inconsistency. That's the only thing I'm worried about for the Devils. They have a lot of scoring power. They have a really talented offense. I love Dougie Hamilton on the blue line. I think he's kind of bouncing back from the year he had last year, but my biggest concern for them is in the crease, because Vanacek and Shesterkin, and I wouldn't want to be Vanacek on that side of that matchup, because even though Igor Shesterkin's having a little bit of an off year, I think a lot of people expected him to have a similar year to the one he had last season. He can turn it on any second. So the playoffs come around, the regular season is wiped off, he could be the Igor Shesterkin we all saw last year, and in that case, I would sway a bit in the Rangers' favor. But the Devils are a team I don't think anybody in the East wants to play, so more than ever, there's a couple of years where people are like, I don't really care where I end up in the standings, but right now I know Carolina really wants to hold on to that number one spot in the Metro.
You mentioned Kane and Tarasenko, and we've talked about Meyer. As far as a fantasy perspective goes, is there, because Kane's start in New York hasn't been great, Tarasenko's been pretty solid though, but is there a player that just was traded before the deadline that you've that's caught your attention from a fantasy perspective?
I mean, I think there's a couple of players that a lot of people were waiting to move to really get their value. I'm really excited to see what Jacob Chychrun's going to be doing in Ottawa. That's the one where I got so many questions leading up to the deadline for a while, because it seems like he was out for trade-related reasons for literally years, about whether people should hold on to him or whether they should drop him because they didn't know what was going to happen to him. I think he found a really good fit with a team that's going to try as hard as they can to make the postseason. So that's someone I'm super excited about. I think the Boston Bruins really added a lot of good pieces at the trade deadline. They're the best team in the league. They only got better. It's clear that these players have already fit in with the Bruins so far. Dmitry Orlov looks like a brand new player so far with Boston. I'm excited to see where Tyler Bertuzzi will eventually fall into the lineup. He's so talented as well. I think a lot of people forget what great of a season he had last year with the Red Wings. I mean, he was a 30-goal scorer and played under 70 games, so I'm excited to see what he does in Boston. That team's also such a scary team, the East. I feel like every team I talk about in the East is just so talented. It's really anyone's cup to lose at this point.
Yeah, Luke and I were talking about that during commercial. Like, the East is such a gong show. The West, the entire West has such an opportunity this year to make something happen. Okay, wait, you were just talking about new guys who potentially can have a major impact. I heard you and Nick Alberga at some point this week talking about John Klingberg. You think he'd get a bit of a bump on the Wild? Like, I don't know what's going on with that guy.
I hope so. He also is another player who's had a really high ceiling in the past, and I know he, like, bet on himself this year. I know he really wants to just get a contract in a place that he wants to play, and I think Minnesota might be the place to give him that opportunity, just because for me, he's going to be on that top power play unit. He's playing with such elite players on that unit. It's absolutely stacked with Kaprizov and Erichinek and Zuccarello and Boldy. So I think that's going to give him the opportunity he needs to prove himself. I think he's a man on a mission this season, which is why I would recommend picking him up if he was available in your league. And so I have faith in John Klingberg right now.
Ooh, I like that one.
Yeah.
I don't like the Minnesota Wild, but I like that selection.
didn't you just say to me this is maybe Minnesota could do something this year? Oh, you don't like it for the Avs?
I was talking about the goaltender goaltending duo. They might be able to do that with Fleury and Gustafson, but that might be more of a fantasy than a real life thing. I love fantasy hockey. I know you obviously do too, because you do such great work with it. What's maybe the biggest fantasy lesson you've learned this season that you're taking into next season? I always like reflecting on how fantasy seasons go, and I'm just like, okay, I'm not going to make that mistake next year. Like, maybe I should remember this going into my draft kind of thing. So do you have any of those lessons off the top of your head?
I feel like I have one this year that a lot of people probably have in their leagues, and I know a lot of people use their first round pick pretty early on a goaltender, and it backfired for a lot of people. If you're using your first round pick on a guy like Andre Vasilevsky, I know you're like punching the air right now. So for me, I think it would just be being a little bit more cautious. I know last year was the year of goalies. I always say, like, every season, it's like a year of one fantasy position. This year for me, it's defensemen. Last year was goalies. But don't let that change your mind too much heading into your draft the next season, because it can backfire really easily.
Yeah, it can. You want to talk about backfire? Like, you guys are like, I love fantasy hockey. I hate fantasy hockey right now. We're in a goals league, far down. So obviously, coming into the season, I just said I thought Austin Matthews was going to score 70. Spoiler alert, not the case. So in our league, goals are worth 2 points. So I took Austin Matthews over Connor McDavid, and I just want to like jump into a lake or something. I don't even know what to say about it, Anna. But the guys on Overdrive on our drive show in the afternoons were kind of debating if Connor McDavid going forward should receive the Gretzky rule in fantasy. Just don't allow him to be drafted. Has he kind of like gotten into that territory to you?
I feel like he probably has, to be honest. Every game I see of Connor McDavid, it looks like he's playing with, like, literally, like, peewee players around him. He's having an unreal season right now. I don't know when he's going to stop. He's scoring every night. He's putting up points every night. It's just, like, an unreal year for him. I can't be amazed at this point, because I should expect it to happen night after night, but he's so far above the rest of the league right now in terms of everything he's doing this season. To talk about futures a little bit, I feel like this is just really setting up Edmonton for a pretty good run this postseason with the momentum he's built and the year he's having individually and how much he's helped the team around him. I really hope they figure out their back end a little bit and get some momentum going and stability down there, because it might be Edmonton's year, guys.
Yeah, I know. Just with the West being wide open, it could be. Okay, really quick before we let you go, 70, yes or no?
Ooh, that's tough. You know what? I'll bet on him. He's a Richmond Hill kid. I'll bet on it.
Okay, I like it. I'm not betting against Connor McDavid. One thing I love about Toronto hockey players is that, like, depending on where you're from in the GTA, you could just decide. Like, some people are like, yeah, he's Newmarket. No, he's Aurora. Come on, he's Richmond Hill. Yeah. Lots of people want to claim Connor McDavid. I like that. But that was Anna Duo on the phone. She works for the NHL. Anna, appreciate the time, ma'am.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, Anna Duo of the National Hockey League. Does lots of fantasy stuff there. I'm never going to live it down, Luca.
I was like, just looking at the standings. Do you want to know the standings?
Yeah, I'm deep in the basement, Luca. Like, I don't want to hear about it. Soon as Connor started to pop up, I just ditched it. I'm not doing anything else. I think I have a move left. I don't even want to use it.
So McDavid has 178 points.
Like, that's probably more than my team has.
Based on our scoring. And Matthews has 91. So it's almost a 100-point swing.
I'm so nearly dumb.
In a 100-point swing.
If I could go back in time and beat myself up on that day that we taped that fantasy special, I would.
I can't say anything, because I argued with you that, you know what, yeah, maybe it's smarter to look at Matthews because goals are worth two, and if he scores 60, that's 120 points right
like,
there.
I don't have any, I'm not embarrassed about the move, because ahead of the season, anybody would have really made that move. In a goals league, Carlo did it the year before, and it worked. He won.
Of course.
It's just that Austin Matthews decided the one year that I get first overall in fantasy. I never get first overall in fantasy. Like, I never do. But of course, the one year I do, Austin Matthews decides to be a silky guy. I guess that's his thing now. So
he saw Bergeron winning, and he's like, someone's got to put an end to this.
Yeah, he was over it. And Connor McDavid said that about, all the trophies that Austin Matthews likes to win.
Yeah.
Anyways, one more, in honor of AB, I'll say one more lap around the track. His favorite thing to say.
Is that his favorite thing to say?
Yeah, when we're going into the last segment, he always says, one more lap around the track on the other side. Julie Tesheri and Luca Celebre, it's Leafs Lunch here on TSN 1050. It's Julie Tesheri and Luca Celebre with you on Leafs Lunch today. Al's brother on vacay mode. Al's brother vacay mode is a very iconic thing, so we're excited for him. and we're excited for just an upcoming week or couple weeks in Leafs Nation. They've got some tough games on the schedule. But Luca, you and I were taking a peek at the just the standings in the NHL and how things are standing and where people are falling, because the top three teams in each division have just kind of been locked in for a while.
In the East, yeah. Even in the West, I guess, because the wildcard race is kind of like, it's meh. It's unless Nashville like rattles off a few wins here to make it a little interesting.
Yeah, they've heated up as of late too, yeah. Randomly. There's always that one team after the deadline that's like, no, I'm not going out like this.
And they sold all their players too. Like they gave up Janot. They made some trades. Not all their players, I should say. They still have really good players, but...
Yeah, I feel you. Winnipeg is another team that's confusing me lately. No one's... Should we get Jesse Pollock like on the phone right now to comment on this? But they seem to be like kind of falling off a little bit of a cliff ski here, and they were a lock.
Yeah, it's been strange. I wrote just a Digital Sports Center story this morning, and you look at some of their top guys, like Kyle Connor had 50, almost hit 50 last year. 3 goals in his last 16 games.
Dang.
Scheifele has 7 in his last 16. PLD 5 and 21. Blake Wheeler 6 in last 29 games. And then Hellebuck like has had a pretty strong season, but then his last 10 games or so, he's kind of been meh. And if he's not their best player every night and they're not scoring goals, like they're in trouble. I don't know. So I think the thing that I'm wondering is, who catches them? Like, Nashville has the games in hand. Like, with 3 games in hand, they could. Calgary, I'm not willing to count out yet either because of Sutter.
Right.
And that they've lost. Like, it's insane.
I don't know, man. Is it over for Calgary? They have the most disgusting vibes. Like, not
they
good,
do.
Disgusting, bad, disgusting. Like, it just feels like things are not right there this year.
It does. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt on 13 overtime losses and just be like, you know what? Maybe you find a way to win some games in regulation down the stretch here and just make this a little interesting.
Markstrom's been better lately, too, which is promising.
I don't know. Who do you want to see in the wild card? Just watchability. East, West. Do you
versus
want
Boston?
Winnipeg in? Yeah, I guess. So you're talking about versus Boston, like, versus Carolina. Like, what's going to make you watch just Boston trounce a team?
Well, the Ottawa Senators are the only team in the NHL with a winning record against Boston this year.
That's insane.
Riddle me that, Luca.
That is insane.
So I think I want to see Ottawa-Boston in the first round.
That'd be fun. I want to see Buffalo sneak in, too, because I know we love Buffalo.
Yeah. You and I have been like, come on, we want nice things for the good people of Buffalo, New York.
We really do.
They deserve more than this. They gave us chicken wings.
That's a big win.
And this is what their hockey team gives them in return?
It's
not
win.
Very cool.
And they've lost a couple in a row now, too. It's just like, they're still in this race, obviously. But watchability, Ottawa and Buffalo have got to be the top two just because they have so many fun players.
I think
players.
So, too. Like, both of those teams have been knocking at the door for a couple years now. It's just that I'm rooting for Buffalo and Ottawa. It'd be the most fun if they snuck in.
If the Islanders make it in, I'm just sad because
oh my God. The real Stanley Cup is making sure the Islanders don't make it
completely
to the playoffs.
Completely agree.
They are painful hockey to watch.
It's horrible. I want them so far away from the playoff picture.
Yeah, I completely agree. Let's do this again tomorrow. Is it you again tomorrow?
No.
Oh my gosh, who is it?
I don't know, actually.
Okay, I have a rotating cast of characters. Luca will hang out with me on Monday. Oh no, it's Josh Cloak hanging out with me tomorrow.
Oh, there
you
go.
Frankie towards the end of the week. Luca a little bit more next week. So lots to come during AB's big vacation here on Leafs Lunch. But we'll see you on the other side. Great stuff today, Luca. And we'll chat tomorrow. If you missed any of today's show, you can find it on tsn1050.ca or the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts. Gameplay is up next.